This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Mike and Scott. This story is part of our episode, Vice Control. Around the world, there is a growing movement to decriminalize prostitution, but that's a divisive idea stirring passionate debates.
In order to have good health policy, we have to use science.
So where is the science, the data? That's tricky when it comes to prostitution. Yes, it's a multi-billion dollar industry, but in the U.S., it happens underground. That makes it really hard to study.
Except this one part of the country, this one place where the laws of prostitution were totally upended.
That's Ilana Gordon, and we're not talking about brothels in rural Nevada.
Nope, we're talking about Rhode Island. For several years, ending in 2009, indoor prostitution, think spas, online escorts, was not a crime there. The whole thing happened kind of by accident. More on that in a bit. But at the time, it fueled a heated public debate about sex, crime, and health. But then, everyone kind of looked the other way. Well, not everyone.
No, I think more people should be talking about Rhode Island.
It's significant.
You actually see these improvements.
You see the silencing of victims.
So the story really begins in the 70s. The era of disco, tie-dye, and free love. And in Rhode Island, an uptick in prostitution, especially in the state's capital. Lawmakers wanted to speed up the conviction process by making sex work a misdemeanor instead of a felony. And in a complicated rewrite of the prostitution statute, they narrowed the definition of prostitution itself to just street workers, the primary focus of community complaints. Most people didn't really take notice, even judges and police, for decades. Fast forward to the early 2000s. Michael Kisalika, an unassuming civil attorney, got an unexpected request one day.
And in walked a lady and she said, "My friends are in trouble. My friends are in trouble. Please go help them right now."
Michael normally doesn't do criminal defense.
Well, I handle plaintiffs' personal injury cases. I handle legal malpractice cases on behalf of plaintiffs. And I do some insurance defense work.
But he listened to the panicked woman, whose friends, he says, had been working in a house on a main drive in Providence. Police had arrested them for engaging in prostitution. Michael took the case, but not having done much criminal defense.
I said, "Gee, I really ought to know the area of law I'm going to be practicing in," so I read the law.
There's something to be said for having fresh eyes, because Michael noticed something that for years other criminal defense lawyers hadn't, that the statute didn't specify anything about indoor prostitution.
I took a brand new look at it, I guess you could say. And it became apparent to me pretty quickly that the statute didn't line up with what the girls had been charged with doing.
Soon, word got out that he was winning these cases, and more women came to him.
Yeah, the turning point was when the mayor of Providence, he got word of the fact that the police were making these raids, but that the judges were dismissing my cases based on arguments that I was making that he didn't think were correct.
In 2003, the city went to trial with Michael and his legal defense on this issue. The hope was to squash it and clarify once and for all whether this type of activity was criminal. But
the judge ruled, like I argued, that as long as it was two consenting adults, it didn't matter what they agreed to, as long as they did it in private, and it could certainly involve anything, including money.
This became referred to as the loophole. And with that, the alternative newspaper's advertising section exploded with ads for things like body rubs and table showers. Rhode Island, home to a little under a million people, gained a pretty big reputation for its now legal sex industry.
And you come from
I can go there and be free and not worry, finally.
This is Bella Robinson. She says when she learned indoor prostitution was decriminalized in Rhode Island, she packed up her stuff and moved there from New Jersey. Bella is an online escort and says in this line of work, anything could go bad at any time. That's the reality. but in Rhode Island, she felt safer.
If someone tried to rape, rob, or assault me, I can report it. I can tell on you.
And were there situations where you wanted to do that before but couldn't?
Oh, absolutely.
It was 2009. She stayed in a hotel for a while. Business was great. Money was great.
I have seen over 1,680 clients since I moved to Rhode Island.
She had clients who travel in from other states, knowing that it wasn't a crime there.
The extent of the prostitution became almost pervasive.
That's Thomas Verdi, the deputy police chief in Providence. He says beyond an explosion in internet ads, the number of Asian massage parlors involved in prostitution in the city went from just a handful to more than 20.
Law enforcement was handcuffed and it allowed them to operate with relatively ease. And because we lacked the Indo-prostitution law, and they knew it, it just flourished.
A movement began to get rid of the loophole in the law and once again criminalize all sex work.
I felt that it was very important to stop the movement to decriminalize prostitution in the United States.
That's Donna Hughes, a sociologist at the University of Rhode Island. She says she doesn't support criminalizing women for this, and that originally she was open-minded about the Rhode Island loophole. But she says when she started researching the consequences of that loophole, she changed her mind. She worried that Rhode Island would become ground zero for decriminalization across the country.
It is just very harmful to women. It really is a very libertarian approach, but the ones who get freedom are the pimps, the sex buyers, the businessmen who then can rent properties to the massage parlors and to the sex buyers. There's very little freedom for the women.
Donna also worried that decriminalization fueled sex trafficking, kidnapping usually young women and forcing them into prostitution. Providence Deputy Police Chief Tom Verdi was also concerned about that.
The police were powerless at the time.
He says some of the spas were hiding trafficking and other organized crime. He says many of these spas were staffed by Asian immigrants.
They'd spend anywhere from 3 to 5 weeks, sometimes a little longer, before someone else from the organization would pick them up and then take them to another city, whether it be New York, Philly was involved, Chicago.
The debate over whether to recriminalize prostitution divided Rhode Island residents, law enforcement, social workers, and even feminists. Passions ran high, but ultimately, the push to recriminalize won out.
Prostitution in outdoors or indoors is a bad thing.
Speaking to NPR, Governor Don Carcheri explained why he signed the law to get rid of the Rhode Island loophole on November 3rd, 2009.
I think it's been a black eye, frankly, in our state that we've allowed this to go on, whatever the reason is, for far too long.
The lawyer who found the original loophole, Michael Kisalika, was dumbfounded.
One day you're a criminal, the next day they flip a switch and the law changes and you're not a criminal, and then 6 years later they flip the switch back again and you become a criminal again. It is a little crazy.
Most of the massage parlors shut down. As for Bella, the online escort who moved to Rhode Island, she was angry.
It pissed me off. I didn't know anything about activism. I didn't even know what a sex worker rights organization was.
Bella changed that. She became active with Coyote, a sex worker union and advocacy group.
So criminalization is a punishment for women who won't conform. And we're just supposed to go live in the streets in poverty and not complain about it and be good women.
And she gained an unlikely ally of sorts, 2,500 miles away.
I think for me, the biggest takeaway is that decriminalization really does improve public health outcomes.
Manisha Shah is a researcher at the University of California, Los Angeles. She studies the worldwide economics of prostitution. For her, the Rhode Island experience was pure gold.
I was excited. I'm like, oh my God, we can do really, really great research from this natural experiment.
When else does a social science researcher get a real-life case study like this, especially on prostitution, which is so hard to study? So what did you find? The obvious, sex work exploded. And the not-so-obvious, gonorrhea rates dropped during this loophole. A lot.
Around 40%.
40%?
Yes. Yes.
So that's not just like a fluke.
We don't think so. I mean, we spend a lot of time beating up on all of the data and, you know, estimating these things in different ways, and we just can't get the results to go away.
A 40% drop is a big deal in the world of public health. Manisha thinks one of the reasons for this positive outcome is that legalization empowered sex workers to say no to riskier sexual behavior. Still, perhaps even more surprising than that decrease in gonorrhea was another public health development. Sexual violence, rapes, dipped dramatically. And not just amongst sex workers, it was across the board.
Reported rape offenses decreased by about 30%.
That's another big decrease. She says, if anything, you'd expect rape to go up, as when prostitution is decriminalized, sex workers are more likely to report rapes. She examined other crime data, like burglaries, murders, to try to discount for this sharp drop. But it didn't match. So what happened? That, she says, is harder to answer. But she has a theory. She says while she knows for some men, rape is about power.
I think the argument that we're making is that that might not be true for all men.
In other words, for some men, maybe rape is just about sex. And if there's a legal and accessible market for it, the number of rapes in a community will go down. This has not been a popular theory, because for many, this challenges the notion that rape is about violence and power, not sex.
So I consider myself a feminist, but I think this finding angers a lot of feminists, and it is a very controversial idea.
And then there's that other controversial idea. Do you worry that decriminalization could also fuel sex trafficking?
I mean, I definitely worry about that. It's an area that I would love to be able to do more with.
But she believes there's no solid evidence yet that decriminalizing prostitution does lead to an increase in trafficking women and forcing them into prostitution. She's more concerned with something else.
The thing I worry about, though, is the conflation of human trafficking and sex work. Because I think there is a huge segment of the sex work population that is making the decision to do this type of work.
The sex market and this type of work hasn't gone away in Rhode Island.
I have a lot of regular clients. I rarely have to advertise anymore.
Bella, the online escort who moved to the state and is now a sex worker activist with Coyote, says the oldest profession has just gone back underground or moved to other corners of the internet. A research project at Rhode Island's Brown University is trying to connect with those sex workers to learn about their experiences since indoor prostitution was recriminalized. Bella is helping.
We interviewed 62 Rhode Island sex workers on their real lives and experiences. And I didn't post the link anywhere. I actually called them and emailed all the escort ads.
The hope is to glean even more insight from this brief experimentation with legal prostitution in this small New England state. For The Pulse, I'm Alana Gordon. Kentucky.
Ain't the country lucky? New Jersey gives us glue. And you come from Rhode Island, and little old Rhode Island is famous for you. Cotton comes from Louisiana.